This was Governor Scott Walker's 8th address to lawmakers during a career in politics that has spanned 25 years. It was a long speech in an election year for the governor. In his address, he renewed his call for welfare reform, which includes proposals to implement a mandatory photo ID for food stamp recipients, increasing work requirements for those getting food stamps, drug testing for welfare benefits, and more. Let's take a listen.
Now, some, maybe even in this Capitol, will complain that our reforms are about making it harder to get government assistance. The truth is, our reforms are about making it easier to get a job.
Brett Healy is the president of the McIver Institute for Public Policy. That's a conservative think tank based in Madison. Brett, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Kate.
Well, we'll mostly talk with you about welfare reform, but first of all, give us your overall impression of what Governor Walker had to say in a State of the State.
As you mentioned, this was a longer than expected State of the State speech. I think we can attribute that to the fact that it's an election year and the governor wanted to roll out a very ambitious legislative agenda for this spring session. So I think everyone was surprised to see the tax cut proposal in the speech. But from our perspective, we were pleasantly surprised. So it was generally positively received from the legislators. The two leaders spoke highly of the speech. So it seems like, if not all, but most of what Governor Walker is proposing for this election year, he'll see passed in the legislature.
Let's zoom in on these welfare reforms, mentioning earlier that the mandatory photo ID for food stamp recipients, increasing work requirements, drug testing. Why does Wisconsin need these welfare reforms? What's going on here?
Well, I think Governor Walker has for a few years now talked about his desire to change government assistance in Wisconsin to a system that truly promotes independence, not government dependence, using his words. And so in the budget, he had several welfare reform proposals, and the special session that he called last Thursday on welfare reform, he has now 10 additional bills that he would like to see passed that, as you mentioned, make some fundamental changes to government assistance in Wisconsin. So I think we're seeing a continuation of his effort to truly make, to borrow a phrase from the governor himself, Wisconsin work for everyone.
The governor has repeatedly said, as he did yesterday in his speech, that public assistance should be like a trampoline, not a hammock. How much of a hammock is it right now?
Well, coming off of some slow economic times, I think we did have some people who had trouble finding a job. And so you're right, the governor has made this central to his vision for welfare reform. He's implementing some hard time limits and some certain requirements for job search and job training. So I think in a state with historic unemployment, the 3%, I think we should be able to find anyone, just about anyone who wants to work, find them a job in the state. And I think that's the governor's goal. I think we'll, if we're ever going to try something new in welfare reform, this is the time with the unemployment rate at 3% and the economy, it looks like it's about ready to heat up.
Brett Healy is with us. He's president of the McIver Institute for Public Policy. That's a conservative think tank in Madison. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you support or oppose photo ID for food stamp recipients? How about increasing work requirements for those who get food stamps or drug testing for welfare benefits? Are these reforms about making it harder to get government assistance or making it easier to find work. Join in at 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. I want to run something by you that was said recently. Former Wisconsin Governor Tommy Thompson, whom Governor Walker brought up in his speech several times. Thompson was addressing Republican activists who had gathered to commemorate the anniversary of President Trump's inauguration on Sunday. And the former governor said that he was giving a reaction to the flipping of the state Senate District 10 seat. And he said, quote, "You can find all kinds of reasons that you want that the Republicans stayed home, that the suburbs were more energized. But the truth of the matter is we got beat." That's according to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Have Democrats become more energized? And did we hear energy in this speech that we would not have heard otherwise in an election year?
I think there's no doubt that the Democrat base is energized. I think you saw that, as you just stated, in the special election in the 10th Senate district. And we, quite frankly, we saw that at the end of President Obama's term with Republicans. They were energized to turn out and vote for a different direction. So this is quite common in politics these days. I think the special election in the 10th was a wake-up call at the Capitol. Did it impact governors' speech yesterday? Probably not. He was already working on the speech well before that and already had, I'm assuming, some of these proposals in the pipeline before the 10th happened. But no one at the Capitol is going to try and minimize what happened in the 10th or try and ignore it. I think you're absolutely right. Republicans now at the Capitol are on notice, and I think you're going to see a more energetic spring session here than we might have in the past.
Let's take a call now. Let's go to Jimmy in Valley Junction. Hi, Jimmy. Go ahead.
Morning.
Good morning.
Morning. Yeah, I just it's always irked me that I think it's good that people work and should be encouraged to work, but I know a lot of people that are working still qualify for benefits like food stamps and stuff because of the poverty wages some of these giant corporations pay. And so along with the big tax cut we gave them, there should have been a move to raise a minimum wage, and then some of these folks that are working for these corporations maybe not even qualify for assistance anymore.
Jimmy, thanks for the call. Let's get Brett to respond. There are jobs out there, Brett, but not high-quality jobs, as Jimmy is mentioning.
Well, I think you have seen, since the federal tax cut, you have seen many companies across the country and here in Wisconsin give year-end bonuses, talk about upping the starting wage at their company. So I think when you have an economy here in Wisconsin with historic unemployment rate at 3%, I think you're going to see exactly what Jimmy wants. I think you're going to see wages rise, not because of a government mandate, but because businesses are competing for workers. And so I think we're going to get to where Jimmy wants to be in the coming years.
Let's go to Christine in Eau Claire with reaction. Christine, go ahead.
Good morning. I am opposed to Walker's addressing welfare in the way he's proposing. It really would be wonderful if politicians who spout out about people who don't want to work would actually sit down and have conversations with those people and find out that there might be issues of transportation. There might be childcare issues. There are a whole host of issues. I have struggled financially my whole life, yet I've worked, I have a college education. It's not that there are circumstances that people need help with. They don't need to be hindered by by a career politician who's lived off the public his whole life.
Christine, thanks for the call. Brett, walk in their shoes for a minute as we wrap up very quickly.
Yeah, I think exactly what we talked about before. Governor Walker is not trying to make it harder for people on government assistance. He wants to make it easier for them to find a job. He's changing the earned income tax credit program so that, at least trying to do a pilot program on that, so that instead of a lump sum at the end of the year, earned income tax recipients can get a monthly amount. So that'll help with bills people need to pay. So I would disagree with Christine. I think Governor Walker is trying really, really hard here to make things better for those on government assistance and trying to develop a way so that they
Brett, we have to break in. I'm sorry. Thank you so much for joining us. Brett Healy is president of the McIver Institute for Public Policy. Back after this news. One of the big announcements in Governor Scott Walker's State of the State address yesterday afternoon was a proposal to have a $100 per child tax credit for families. We're discussing the speech on this hour of the morning show. Let's take a listen to this piece of the governor's seven-part agenda.
It could be a new pair of shoes, a winter coat, activity fees at school, or maybe a copay at the doctor or the dentist office. We know sometimes Wisconsin families face challenges when making ends meet, and this new child tax credit, well, we think it can help. Today, I'm joined by families from all over Wisconsin who will benefit from our child tax credit.
Ken Taylor is the executive director of Kids Forward, formerly known as the Wisconsin Council on Children and Families. Ken, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Well, let's start out with your overall impression of the State of the State address.
Yeah, well, the State of the State is often a time for governors in every state, in every party, to talk about all the good things that are happening and that are going on. And so that certainly is a lot of what we heard yesterday. And so from a child and family perspective, the question that we often ask is, well, and what's not said and what's not talked about? And those are some of the things that that I'd like to talk more about today.
What was not talked about in your view?
Well, you know, there are families who are struggling in our state. And so, you know, we just heard the clip about families who have challenges making ends meet. And so, you know, there was the tax credit that was just discussed, but it will take a lot more than that in order to address this, and there wasn't enough about that in the speech from our perspective.
What are the biggest barriers that Wisconsin families are facing?
Well, we know that there are around 200,000 children who live in families who are below the poverty line, and we know that it's true that $100 will help, but it's going to take a lot more than that. So we know that in those families we need family supporting jobs for the parents, and we need high quality education from cradle to career for the kids, and we need to support the families so that they can be both good employees and good parents, and there are challenges in all of those fronts.
In Governor Walker's welfare reform package, one of the points was getting to get public assistance to pass a drug test. What do you make of that?
Yeah, well, there's lots of things in the governor's welfare reform package that don't appear to us to actually help people get jobs. And so we share the goal of breaking down the barriers to work. We share the goal of getting more people able to have family-supporting jobs. But many of the things that we see in that proposal aren't really targeted to help people get jobs. It's actually about sort of making it harder to access public assistance. And so, you know, the governor said yesterday You know, some will complain that our reforms are about making it harder to get government assistance. And I think that that's exactly right, that that is what many of these proposals will do. So an example, you know, having a photo ID on FoodShare is not going to help anyone get a job. The, you know, when we look at the drug testing for people in housing, you know, one of the questions is, well, what is that based on? And we know from research that people on public assistance and receiving those kinds of benefits are no more likely to be drug users or substance misusers than anyone else. And I think it paints a picture, a false picture of folks who are in need and need this kind of support.
Ken Taylor is with us, Executive Director of Kids Forward. You can join the conversation, 800-642-1234, getting your reaction as well to the governor's State of the State address. Ken, the governor also called for asset limits on public assistance so that people with giant houses and fancy cars aren't getting welfare checks. How big a problem is that?
I don't have the data specifically on that. It's not from our from what we do know, that's a very small problem. And again, it goes to sort of painting this picture about folks who are receiving these kinds of supports. So I think it will have very very small practical effects, because that's just not that's not who's receiving this kind of support. But I am concerned about the tone that sets in the broader public about folks who are receiving this kind of assistance.
At a 3% unemployment rate, certainly the governor spent a good portion of the time of the speech on the economy. In addition to removing barriers, what would you like to see happen to expand the workforce and help low-income families, really help them?
Well, there are some very practical things that would make a huge difference in that. And so one simple thing would be to stop suspending driver's licenses for non-payment of fines that don't have anything to do with driving. So we know that happens over and over again. We know that makes it harder for people to get to their jobs. And this is a big number. There's hundreds of thousands of people who have suspended licenses for things that have nothing to do with their driving. And so that doesn't help people enter the workforce or stay in the workforce. We know that the earned income tax credit, which supports work and makes work pay, is a huge incentive and really supports working families. But there are segments of our state that don't have access to that. So individuals who don't have dependent kids currently can't get that. And so we think that would be a big positive shift. And we also know for working families that childcare is a huge challenge, and that's across the income spectrum. And we are disinvesting in childcare in our state. We now spend $130 million a year less than we did a decade ago. And that's a real challenge for working families. And we also know that folks who work in low-income jobs often don't have predictable schedules or work at night, the second and third shift. And childcare is a real challenge for those folks. And so we need to make sure that childcare is available and affordable for everyone who wants to work and is able to work. And then the final thing is, what do we pay people? And so our minimum wage has been stuck at $7.25 since 2009, and it's losing purchasing power every year. And so those are the kinds of things that we should take a look at to support work.
Let's go to Melissa, who joins us from Black River Falls. Hi, Melissa.
Hello.
Go ahead.
I've worked in the public assistance arena as well as volunteered in communities all throughout the state of Wisconsin, and there are some real basic things that could actually be looked into and done. When you have wages that are stuck with the state employees at a certain level without increasing, Also, you have the age of 49 where participants in, say, the food share programs aren't required to look for work at that age, but yet the retirement age is 65 to 70 years old. $100 tax credit, and I'm a parent who has been required to use assistance before with childcare when I was doing my internship. I went back through college on school on my own. You're talking to somebody who's actually participated in some of these programs. You have to do your part to get off of them.
Melissa, thanks for the reaction. Ken, what do you make of it?
Yeah, there's no question that this is a shared responsibility, and so I agree with Melissa, and it sounds like she has used the programs as they're designed to support her during the times where she needed them and then moved off them. And that's the experience of the vast majority of people who use these programs. That's what they're designed to do. They can always be improved, but that really is how they work for the most part. And so I commend Melissa for using them in that way and then moving on, because that's what most people do.
Ken, as we wrap up, which of the GOP proposals do you think has legs, has the potential to yield positive results?
Well, within the welfare reform arena, there's some suggestions. I talked earlier about the earned income tax credit, and there's some suggestions in there about a pilot program that changes the way that it's paid out, and that's very very consistent with much of the research that could be helpful. We think that should be optional, not mandatory, but that's something that could be good. And also, there's some things in there around how we contract and pay for success and performance. And those are the kinds of things that we should be looking at, because it is about having those programs work well for participants, work well for taxpayers, and it's worth looking into those to make sure that we're getting the most out of the programs that we can.
Ken, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Ken Taylor is Executive Director of Kids Forward, formerly known as the Wisconsin Council on Children and Families. Your insights on the state of the state. Welcome, 800-642-1234. How do you feel about Governor Walker's plan to get a federal waiver to offer reinsurance? Do you support or oppose a law to guarantee that people with pre-existing conditions do not lose health insurance? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. State of the State Address is an annual speech presented by Governor Scott Walker to a joint session of the state legislature. We're breaking it down on this Hour of the Morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Donna Friedsam is a researcher and health policy director of the UW-Madison Population Health Institute. Her areas of expertise include state health policy and health reform and the implementation of federal health care reform. Donna, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
Well, Governor Walker is calling for three changes that he says would stabilize the state marketplace under Obamacare. Let's talk about those one by one. He wants to apply for this federal waiver to offer reinsurance in Wisconsin. Can you explain for us what reinsurance means?
Yes, reinsurance is a program that actually has existed under the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare for the last several years and expired this last year. It's a program where the government provides some kind of a backstop for insurance companies that experience excessively high claims. So if they have larger than expected expenses in their population, that if the insurance company can get some help in handling those costs or expenses so that they don't have to pass on those costs to the insured public, the people that they've enrolled. They don't have to pass on those costs through premiums. So they're basically providing some kind of insurance to the insurance companies against the risk of having very high costs.
Is there any reason to think the Trump administration would not grant Wisconsin that waiver?
There's already been waivers granted to other states to provide reinsurance. And
Minnesota being one of them?
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is likely that that would be granted to Wisconsin. It depends, of course, if there's other things bundled in there. There's been some debates and discussions with other states that have tried to bundle in some other more controversial provisions. But if it's just a straightforward reinsurance program, it's very likely that it will be approved.
The governor says reinsurance would lower premiums for people. Is he right about that?
There's been studies done about how much reinsurance can lower premiums, and reinsurance is one tool that can be used and may lower premiums anywhere from 4 to 11% on a national level. It really depends on how much reinsurance is being provided to the companies. And so, and we've seen in other, in Minnesota and elsewhere, that reinsurance is helpful in lowering the rate of increase in insurance, and certainly can be very helpful. So yes, I think, and we know that under the Affordable Care Act, the reinsurance program was very helpful in helping keep the premiums low, and that in the last year, when we saw premiums increase quite a bit, part of that, and possibly a very significant part of that, was due to the expiration of the reinsurance program along with other things.
He wants to bar insurers from denying coverage to people with pre-existing conditions. That would protect people in Wisconsin from any changes to federal law. What is your reaction to that idea?
Well, that's something that virtually everybody can get behind. That actually is a provision that exists in Obamacare under the Affordable Care Act. And so the governor is essentially saying that we should retain that provision were the Affordable Care Act provision to be repealed somehow. The important thing about that is not only that we retain coverage for pre-existing conditions, but that people with pre-existing conditions continue to have access to affordable coverage as well. So what we want to make sure is that people that have pre-existing conditions can get and are not priced out, and that insurance companies have to somehow provide some affordability to their product to people with pre-existing conditions. And it remains to be seen whether in the structure of the bill that will be a provision or not.
There's also this plan that would ask for a permanent federal waiver to continue senior care, which is the program that helps seniors with prescription drug costs. How difficult would it be to get a permanent waiver?
A permanent waiver is not something that I'm familiar with existing in under federal law.
Mm-hmm.
It really depends on what kind of waiver, I guess, they're asking for. The existing the waivers that generally exist are about demonstration projects and the like, although there are some kinds of waivers that states use to operate their managed care programs under Medicaid. So it may very well be something that can occur. It really depends, I guess, on what provision of federal law they're going to use to ask for that permanent waiver. But it's not a common thing to have a permanent waiver for something other than operating managed care programs. So I guess we'll just have to see what element of federal law they intend to use to ask for that.
Donna, thanks for helping us break down this portion of the speech.
You're welcome.
Donna Friedzum is a researcher and health policy director of UW-Madison's Population Health Institute. Her areas of expertise include state health policy and health reform. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the state of the state's attention on schools? What do you think about Governor Walker's plans for rural schools? Join in or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Back in a moment. Governor Scott Walker called for increased funding for rural schools in his State of the State address yesterday, including allowing some districts to increase property taxes, a provision he vetoed from the 2017 to 2019 state budget. Rural school districts would get an additional $6.4 million in new funding under his agenda. We're talking about it on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Ken. Thanks for listening. Kim Kokol is the executive director of the Wisconsin Rural Schools Alliance and a member of the Regional Educational Laboratory Midwest's Rural Research Alliance. Kim, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me on this morning. Appreciate it.
How would you describe the state of Wisconsin's rural schools?
I think, you know, with everything that's been going on, I think our rural schools are doing well, despite some of the things that have happened over the years. I think some of the things that the governor brought up in his State of the State yesterday are a step in the right direction to help our rural schools and to give them future support.
What are some of the finer points that spoke to you?
I think a couple of the things that, you know, we're glad came back through after the budget was done are the sparsity aid, which you had mentioned earlier, and the low revenue support for some of our districts that are those low revenue districts. You know, there's a couple caveats. Actually, there's a hearing on that today on both those pieces, and couple of things that we're going to request that maybe be looked at to even expand on what the governor has proposed is on the sparsity aid. If you remember back, the governor had originally proposed a second tier, which would have taken the enrollment up to 1,000, and that's something that we felt was important. We'd like to see it go further in the future just because many of our higher enrollment districts are very sparse. And, you know, that's something we need to take a look at. But, you know, this was definitely a step in the right direction for Representative Nygren and Senator Markline to bring these issues back. The piece on the low revenue has been a very important one that we have been pushing for a long, long time, along with many of the other organizations in the state, because we've got some districts that have just been stuck in this perpetual staying behind everybody because of where they were back in the 90s when the revenue caps were put in. The one caveat we're asking to be reconsidered there is there's the stipulation that if you had a failed operating referendum, you are not eligible for this aid until for 3 years. And we see that as being kind of a negative because many of these districts that are being left out, and I believe there's 7 or 8 of them, are being left out because of the failed referendum. And it was because of operating, you know, basically to keep the buildings running. It wasn't for capital improvement and things like that. And our fear is that, you know, in a year or two in this 3-year cycle, they're going to have to go back to a referendum again and just, you know, for operating. And if they can't pass that referendum again, they're going to be in this another 3-year cycle out. And we just kind of see this as a negative, whereas if that referendum language was removed, we could find, you know, that many of these districts getting that aid would maybe not have to go to referendum down the road.
So removing some barriers to get to the dollars that rural schools need is what I'm hearing from you?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, we're very happy. These are positive steps in the right direction, but some barriers are still there that we'd like to see removed to even expand and, you know, make the program stronger for all rural districts.
What is the biggest challenge you see right now in rural districts? What is the pulse of rural school districts?
I think the biggest thing that many of our rural districts are dealing with is a declining enrollment. And a lot of that is, you know, because businesses have moved out of the rural areas and, you know, there just aren't the jobs out there anymore. And then, you know, in many of our districts, it's high transportation costs and, you know, there is provisions that were put in the state budget this year to help with that high transportation that we were very happy with. But, you know, I mean, when you look at some of our school districts out there, I mean, I've got one district that I'm going to actually talk about today at the hearing. This is how sparse it is. It's 1.6 kids per square mile, and it covers about 600 square miles, the district does.
Wow.
And but they don't receive sparsity aid because their enrollment's too high.
You also see a changing demographics in Wisconsin, an aging population. How does that impact rural schools?
It does have an impact, you know, because there's fewer students out in these areas, you know, and then trying to get folks that are maybe no longer have children and, as you said, aging out. You know, when it comes to referendums, many of those folks are on a tight income, and it's hard to convince them sometimes that this is important, you know. And, you know, we always try to sell it, you know, this is important for your grandchildren, and, you know, there were people there for your children moving forward, and that's why, you know, education is important and we need that support. But it does make passing referendums more and more difficult just because of people, more and more people on fixed incomes.
Kim Kochel, in recent days, Governor Walker has laid out this initiative to try to boost the number of jobs in rural areas, expand jobs programs by a $50 million plan. What impact would that, do you think, have on rural school districts?
I think that is a positive step in the right direction. It's hard to say how far that $50 million will go, you know, but I think, you know, it's definitely the right idea. It's something we've been talking about with legislators, is how do we bring businesses back to the rural area? You know, and in the governor's speech, he did talk yesterday a little bit about the white space initiative and broadband. And I think those are two important factors to help bring businesses out, because if you don't have that connectivity out in the rural area, it's hard to get businesses to move out there. But there's definitely a workforce out there, and if we can get businesses back in the rural area, there's a workforce.
The governor also called for a $100 per student increase in sparsity aid, which you have been talking about. He also mentioned a child tax credit that would give families $100 for each child who is under 18 years old. Do you see that having any special effects, good or bad, for those in rural school districts?
I haven't had a chance to really look at that one closely, you know, and I mean, looking at it at face value, I think any additional money is good for families. How it will impact education, I really, at this point, I couldn't speak to that.
So in the state of the state, the governor did mention schools quite a bit, an emphasis on putting more dollars into schools. That was in his accomplishments. It was also in the initiatives that he put forth. With a very limited timeline for the legislature in getting work done this session, how do you see schools faring?
Well, I think, you know, again, you know, there was, you know, some really good money put into this budget for education. One thing I think we have to keep in context, though, is this additional money gets us back to about 2011 funding because of all the prior cuts that have been made over the last, you know, number of years, along with not keeping up with inflation. So I think we need to keep that in perspective. The additional money is great. It's a positive step forward. But you know, we do need to keep that in perspective. So I think we're still going to be in a catch-up mode. You know, so any additional money that the governor and the legislators can keep moving forward towards education is going to be very well received and helps us get, you know, closer and closer to back to where we need to be for adequate funding for our schools.
When you're out in rural school districts, what do you hear? What else do rural school districts in Wisconsin need right now at this point in time?
I think the biggest thing that I hear, and I know it's the main focus of our organization through our membership survey, is just, you know, a lot's going to rest on the Blue Ribbon Committee that Representative Kitchens and Senator Olson are in charge of right now to try to come up with a fair funding formula, because the present funding system does not work. It really, you know, can penalize a lot of our rural districts that look like they're rich because of recreational land and hunting land and things like that, where in reality they're very poor districts. And so they kind of get a real double whammy on that. And, you know, so if we can find a funding formula that is much more adequate and equitable and, you know, take some of those factors out and really truly look at the people that are living there and, you know, where their income is, I think that would make a really great improvement for us.
What are the key takeaways that you want lawmakers to understand today when you address them?
I think the biggest thing is, you know, one size doesn't fit all, and I think that's a really important piece, you know. And another area I think, we've talked about and have been supportive of, and there's been hearings on already, is, you know, how can we provide better mental health, especially out in the rural areas, for our young people and our adults? Because it is a major, major issue, and it is hard to find, can't think of the word right off the top of my head here right now.
Mental health services, enough
services, yes.
Clinics.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And it's just really hard to keep those providers out in the rural areas. You know, I know we've had a couple districts up in the western part of the state that have tried to do some things, and, you know, they'll get a provider that'll come in and they'll work with the students for a while, and then all of a sudden they'll get a better offer and be gone, you know, and that really breaks that chain of confidence with a student when you get a, you know, get comfortable with a worker. So, you know, those are things that really need to be looked at, and, you know, how can we continue to get better services out into the rural areas. And like I said, you know, probably the biggest things that we're going to continue to talk to legislators about are that fair funding and, you know, how can we bring better mental health services out to our communities.
As we wrap up here, Kim, when you see such sprawling districts, lots of miles between homes, how big of an issue is transportation in all of this?
Well, you know, I've got one district up in the northeastern part of the state right now that it's a major issue because of the cost of buses and trying to replace buses. And that's something that we're actually in the process of working on right now. How can we help these districts purchase buses? Because of the cost, it sometimes really has an impact on that revenue cap. And if we can try to find a way to purchase buses outside the revenue cap, I think that would be very helpful because many of these districts, you know, especially up in the far north, as their buses are aging out, and a lot of times it's due to, you know, the amount of salt and corrosion that these buses take on, I think we could really, that could be very helpful because we want to make sure our students, all of our students are on safe buses.
Kim, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Kim Kokel is the Executive Director of the Wisconsin Rural Schools Alliance and a member of the Regional Educational Laboratory Midwest's Rural Research Alliance. Earlier, we talked with MacIver Institute President Brett Healy, Kids Forward Executive Director Ken Taylor, and UW Population Health Institute Health Policy Director Donna Friedsam. This special coverage of the State of the State was produced by Bill Martins, Nyasia Ellison, and Brianne Chasso. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this is the Ideas Network.